Okay. Thank you guys for your endurance making it to this last slot. I think our topic tonight is whether or not, or how we're supposed to approach an anniversary card that was written by artificial intelligence. And I want to share an insight that I've thought about a lot, and something that Rabbi Leibowitz and I, when we spoke about what we were going to talk about, certainly requires a little bit of tinkering with, a little bit of altering, and with an attempt to really attack head-on what it is that that we're going to be discussing. There's a Mishnah that appears at the end of Pirkei Avos, and the Mishnah at the end of the fifth parak describes that we have a phrase that was taught by a particular Tana. His name was Barhehe. He comes along and he teaches the following. And he tells us that, I'm going to stand up if that's okay, otherwise I might fall asleep. So, well, I don't know if I can, the camera, but, okay. He tells us the following statement. And he describes a statement that some of you are familiar with, others of you might not be familiar with. And the statement is, Lifum Tzara Agra. That based on how much effort a person puts into something that they do, they automatically are going to get reward in return for what it is that they put in. So in any scenario that a person finds themselves in life, the harder and the more investment we put in toward that particular goal that we're trying to achieve, so the more we're going to feel like we're accomplished, the more we're going to feel like we're getting something in return. Lefum tzara agra. But I want to share a comment that the Rambam actually makes on this Mishnah that I think really gives a certain perspective on what it means to work hard and where it is that the reward is coming from. Now, again, the title that we're trying to really understand is whether or not we can go ahead and write an anniversary card through the use of AI and through the use of ChatGPT. So I want to share with you what it is that the Rambam says about this Mishnah of Lefum Tzara Agra. And the Rambam quotes in the name of this Ben Hehe, and he describes the following thing. And he says, Masha Titzar Batorah Yascharcha. The more effort that a person puts into the Torah that they're going to learn, the schar, the reward they're going to receive is going to be requisite with the reward that, with the effort that they put in. V'yamru shalo yiskayim min hachachma, and nothing of the wisdom that a person takes on is going to be miskayim, is going to last. Ela masha talmud b'toreach v'amo. So, depending on how much work a person puts in, that's going to be the reward that we're going to receive. That's the simple understanding of this Mishnah. But the Rambam continues, and the Rambam describes, and he says, "V'yira min hamelamed," that the person who's going to produce that information is actually going to be the source of something great, is going to be the source of something incredible. And what we receive from the Malamid, what we receive from the teacher of that particular piece of Torah, that particular shir or chabura or whatever it is that we're going to be learning, there has to be a source from which that comes. And when we think about the information that we receive, when we think about the learning of Torah that we're involved in, whatever it is that we're doing, there's somebody at the other end that's presenting us with that information. Somebody, that person, is not just a person often, but that person is years and years and years of Mesorah, years and years and years of wisdom, of information, of chains back to Tanaim and to Amoraim. And when we think about the learning that we do, when we think about the Torah that we learn, when we think about the mitzvot that we do, when we think about literally working through a piece of text, whatever it is, there's something at the other end, there's someone at the other end that's ultimately going to be responsible for that information being shared with us, the teaching of that Torah that we're going to go ahead, that we're going to internalize, the yira min hamilamid that's supposed to come out of the experience of learning Torah. Now, the world of AI and the world of ChatGPT, just by show of hands, how many of you guys have experimented, I guess, with the world of ChatGPT? I imagine everybody, right? All the time. How many of you have experimented with other forms of AI? Okay. Some people, as a teacher, so I've seen all variations of different AIs that have come my way, and assignments that are much clearer that they've been put through AI, and other assignments that are well hid, and you have to do a little bit of digging to find out that really they were plugged into ChatGPT. And once you realize that the dashes that ChatGPT produces are, you know, 1 millimeter longer than the regular dashes, and, you know, inexperienced ChatGPT users don't make up for those so you get a knack for what it is that ChatGPT does. But when we think about the world of tapping into like something a little bit more emotional, something with a little bit more feeling, something that requires us to dig a little bit deeper. So that's where the question that we're attempting to uncover really comes from and really requires us to ask that question. Can I basically put in to ChatGPT, put together a, my wife and I have been married for X amount of years, and you guys aren't married other than a select few, so we'll talk about birthday cards, we'll talk about thank you notes, we'll talk about whatever it is. Can I put a prompt into ChatGPT that basically is going to require it to present you with something emotional and have ChatGPT present it back and take that response and just basically copy and paste it, control C, control V, and send it out. So I'm going to present you with a hot take. I think that it's a take that I personally identify with, and I think that it's something that I think strikes a balance between the world of being solely dependent on the world of AI and at the same time allowing us to have this level of independence, to have this level of personalization when it comes to these types of things. By show of hands, how many of you guys in the last year have ever received something that was written by hand? That was written by hand, a letter, something in the mail maybe, a card? Okay. How many of you can't remember the last time that you received something that was handwritten? Okay, so I imagine, and I could be wrong, but I imagine that some of our parents, every single thank you note, every single invitation, every single card, birthday card, they didn't live in a world that something wasn't handwritten. Nowadays, you go to your mailbox and you open up the mailbox and you see something that's handwritten. So we don't even recognize it anymore. It's something we would never even identify with. So this year, I had a student who, Baruch Shem, is a wonderful boy, and at the end of the year, he wrote me a letter in a sefer, and he gave me the sefer, and I opened up the sefer to the front page, and there was a letter that he had written. He graduated this year, and he's a wonderful boy, and aside from the content of the letter, it was the first time in quite a while that I received a letter that was handwritten. And I read through the letter, I read through what he shared with me and some of the experiences that he had being in my class as a freshman and then as a senior again. And the simple fact that I received something that was handwritten was incredibly meaningful. I don't know whether or not the content was something that came directly from ChatGPT. You know, possible that this boy plugged into ChatGPT. I had a Rebbe for 2 years, and we built a relationship over the course of high school, and he then went ahead and, hand wrote the letter that ChatGPT put back at him, and then he wrote it in the sefer. I still have the sefer. I still have that letter, and every time I open up that letter, regardless of what it is that's in the letter, regardless of the content, regardless of the sentence structure, and the fact that somebody took the time to write something. Again, the gift was nice. The sefer was beautiful. It was a unnecessary gesture. But the fact that he took the time to write a letter, the fact that I see the erase marks, on that page, and he thought about what it was that he was writing, or even if he miscopied from the ChatGPT page that, pushed back at him, whatever it is that he prompted the ChatGPT with, to get something that was handwritten was incredibly meaningful for me, and I shared that with him. And I said to him, I said, throughout your our time as teachers for sure in the world of AI. So most of the work that we do is on computers. Most of your assignments that you present are on computers. I imagine that many of you probably take notes in school on computers. I imagine that many of you probably, if you can't go to sleep at night, you plug something into ChatGPT. What's going to come out? What are the top 10 things that I can do in my own time? And ChatGPT is going to push something back at you. When we go ahead and when we make that personal, so it makes it so much more meaningful. It's something that has so much more depth to it. So granted, ChatGPT is an incredible tool. And granted, it has its limitations. And granted, as some of you probably had the opportunity to hear from Rabbi Sabalevsky just a few minutes ago, there are, challenges in the world of ChatGPT. When we enter into the world of trying to do something emotionally, when we enter into the world of trying to produce something and trying to share a message with somebody else. So that's really where the waters of AI become extremely murky. Because on the one hand, ChatGPT is probably a better writer than I am. ChatGPT is probably better at sentence structure, probably uses synonyms that I never would use, probably has this ability to create and to draw and to articulate a picture that I don't know that I could do on my own. But to go ahead and to take the AI, to go ahead and to take the ChatGPT, and to be able to transition that to something that's a little bit more personal, so I think that that's a balance that we can strike. I think that to take a ChatGPT letter and to simply copy and paste it, to take a glue stick or to take a piece of tape and to print it out and to put it onto an anniversary card and to send it out, So yeah, the person who's going to read that is probably going to be able to identify that this is, doesn't really, you didn't really put much effort into to writing and to sharing something. But the second that you go ahead and you handwrite something, so it puts it into an entirely different category. It makes that so much more meaningful, whatever it is that we're going to give to somebody else. So when we think about this overarching question is, can I take something from ChatGPT that's supposed to be emotionally charged? Can I go ahead and can I write something? Can I share something? Can I, put something together that's supposed to have emotion in it? That's not just the information that I'm receiving. So I think that the more that we're able to personalize it, the more that we're able to make it ours, the more that we're able to make it real, the more that we're able even to change words around. So I think that we can strike this balance of using ChatGPT on the one hand, but not being solely dependent on that which ChatGPT, on that which Claude or Gemini or any of the other AI tools are attempting to accomplish. So I think that that's the balance that we attempt to strike. I imagine that in many of your homework assignments, perhaps your English assignments, I imagine probably have the most ChatGPT, probably history also, and summaries of documents and all of the things that that we're involved in. All of that is an internalization of information. But when it comes to things that are more emotional, when it comes to things that require our feelings, and when it comes to things that require us to actually personalize something, so the asking of that question, understanding what it is that we're attempting to do, understanding what it is, the message that we're trying to share, so that already takes the cake, and we have to do our best to be able to take whatever it is that's going to be spit back at us by the AI and to be able to make it just a little bit more personal. And when we think about what it means and how much meaning can be in a handwritten letter, so it's incredibly meaningful to get something that has somebody's scribble marks, to have something to receive something that has a little bit of an eraser mark, to know that somebody put in the effort. Yeah, granted they might have started in the world of AI, but to allow that to come back to the world of something that I personally invested in means so much more to the person that's receiving it. And in whatever it is, so, it makes it that much more meaningful. I'll just finish with one quick anecdote before I give it back to Rabbi Leibowitz. Imagine that all of you get report cards at the end of a quarter or at the end of a semester or whatever it is. And how a teacher goes ahead and reflects on a student's experience, teach a lot of students often, and there is a Yetzer Hara to put into ChatGPT, so-and-so is a wonderful boy, write two sentences about his progress in my classroom. Okay, so ChatGPT spits it back out, and you can easily copy and paste that response of ChatGPT, put it right into their kid's report card, and okay, so every family gets this. Every family gets the the same, basically the same synonyms, basically the same description. You know, there are three templates, and you know, you get this response about the way that a student has done in class. When you teach a lot of students, it's certainly a shortcut, and it's definitely the easy way out. But when a teacher goes the extra mile, and when a student goes the extra mile, to be able to write something that's a one-sentence anecdote about what it is. So the feedback that I've received after doing this from teachers, from parents, from people, so it totally transforms the experience of something that's just rote, something that's just habitual, something that's just a checkbox type of system, to something that's so much more personal, to something that really actually can be meaningful, a comment about a particular person that can really change the perspective that a parent, that a Rebbe, that you have about a friend, about somebody that you care about a sibling, about a relative. And that goes a tremendous distance. So I think that the more that we personalize the AI, the more that we take the tools that Hashem has created and we make them ours, so the more we're able to utilize them, the more we're able to be efficient in our whatever it is that we're doing, and hopefully the more meaning we can put into the things that we are attempting to accomplish by adding that level of personalization to these types of things.
Okay, generally, first of all, great to see everybody. Thanks for being here. B'shus the holy Talmidim that are here, and B'shus certainly the families and the Rabbanites that have joined us. Usually when you have two people in a session like this, so the model is such that there should be some point of disagreement. In general, in life, it's a good place to be to listen to what Rebbe Israeli has to say, and then know that is probably along the lines of the path that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live life. So it's not a great place in general to disagree with him. Also, in this particular case, I happen to agree with what he was messaging, which is just to sum up in 1 second, that AI used as a crutch or as an assistant to what we are able to express to another human being, to be able to emote and to take out a certain feeling that we have towards somebody, either through the words that we use. I mean, we're all men, so that's a little bit more difficult in general. So whether it's going to be by the words or whether it's going to be by the effort that we show, personalizing, thinking about the person that we're speaking to, not just giving a stereotypical answer, or putting in the effort to actually handwrite. I will certainly agree that when students, here's my tip for you guys, if you want to do something that's really meaningful for a teacher, so when you handwrite, so as he said, when you handwrite, so that is very meaningful, and when you give personal, specific examples of lessons that you took from Rebbeim, and you reflect that back at the end of the year, so that is very meaningful. So I will add one or two comments very briefly. Won't be certainly not arguing, and probably for you guys who are greater experts in AI than I am, might not even be chidushim. And then most importantly, we should hear from you. If you came, so there was something that you were probably looking for. We'll see. We'll with Hashem's help, we'll leave time for questions. Two introductory comments. Whenever we talk about human beings, so there's always yesh v'yesh. It is an incorrect place to be. It's not just wrong. It's not just a disservice, but it's an incorrect place to make a sweeping statement about anybody. That for this person to write an anniversary card or a birthday card or a thank you card to totally tap in and to heavily use AI, that is a mistake. Or to not use AI at all, that's a mistake. Whenever we're dealing with human beings, everybody grew up with a different background. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created all of us differently. We all have different kochos. Our neshamos are certainly different. Nobody is superfluous and nobody is repetitive. And if that's the case, so then there can't be, especially when we're talking about emotions, we're talking about the way the human should react, it cannot be. It's certainly not a Jewish perspective that there's a one-size-fits-all and there's one answer for everybody. It has to be that everybody... Each one of us as individuals, we should be doing cheshbon nefesh. We should have time that we're turning our AIs off and turning our phones off. The only way to really get to know ourselves is only if we give ourselves time to look in the mirror and time to think and time to reflect, time to understand who we are. And based off that, then we should speak to our mentors and to our rabbeim about where exactly does AI fit into where I should be using it. That and also, we know that knowledge in general is a tremendous value for in our religion. How do we know that the knowledge is an incredible value? It's maybe the highest value of anything that we're doing. Okay, this is the interactive part, right? So where do we see that? Okay, for those who are can't see the crowd in the videos, I just want everybody's hands up. There's so many people. It's difficult to choose who we're going to call on. No? Okay, someone. Yeah. How do we know that knowledge is a value in Judaism? When you guys hear this answer, you're going to be like, whoa, I need a... Yeah, there we go. That's right. Okay, that's for sure true. One of the greatest things that we can do with our time is to learn Torah, and that's knowledge based. Well, if Matt started, so we'll continue in the back. No, Long Branch, no?
Yeah. Yeah. Science.
Okay, it's not just Torah. It's also science. So we see the Rambam for sure. Who knows how the Rambam had so much time? He didn't have AIs, but somehow he knew everything, and he had the time to be a doctor and to be a tremendous gadol and to write revolutionary and transformative writings. So for sure, the Rambam, yeah.
Torah
Shebaal Peh,
like to remember by heart.
Torah Shebaal Peh, right? It's not just written work, but and Torah Shebaal Peh is huge. That's a lot of knowledge. That's all true. We're missing something even more basic. Yeah. That if you look, thank you. If you look in the, and we should think about this. And if you didn't have this answer at the tip of your fingers, it doesn't make you a bad person at all. It certainly doesn't make us rishayim. But it should knock on our hearts a little bit about, wait a second, I'm doing something all the time. Am I really paying attention to what it means? In the middle section of the Shemoneh Esrei, Shemoneh Esrei is broken up into three sections. The first section of the Shemoneh Esrei is... Right, correct. Shevach. Second part is request, and the third part is hodah. In the middle part, the things that we're asking for, so it would make sense that the greatest values are the things that we're asking for. That we're asking for first. The very first thing we ask for is atah chonein l'adam das, that Hashem should. In that bracha itself, first is the shevach part. We say v'chaninu me'itcha. I say chachma bina v'das, because Nusach Sfarad is the right way to daven. But for those who say de'a bina v'haskel, so. So either way, we're asking for knowledge. So knowledge is of paramount importance. It's part of the very fabric of being a Jew. It's definitional in terms of who we are. That's what we're supposed to spend our time doing. It doesn't say anywhere in the bracha. In fact, maybe it does say in the bracha. It doesn't say in the bracha that we should put in effort. We know that there's an idea of a melus, and we know that there's that the more effort that we put in. So we know that lafum tzara agra. So we know that should translate then into more knowledge. But the truth is, we're cheating. We go to Hashem and we say chaninu me'itcha. Okay, whatever. Wherever we follow, give me the knowledge that lahavdil a billion times. You know, but isn't that almost the same thing? We don't say Hashem. The bracha is not Hashem. Give me the effort. You know, help me have the ability to sit long enough to be able to learn. We say chaneinu, give it as a gift. Let it fall into my hands. So it could be, here's a hot take. It could be that what we're davening for, we've been davening for years for AI. We've been davening for years for for knowledge to fall into our hands. Okay, there's a side question. It's not our topic for tonight. Is that once we have, once we get access to the knowledge very easily, what are we doing with all the time that is saved? And now we've discovered, like, oh, I could ask any question, I could get any answer at my fingertips. I have so much time in my hands now. What am I doing with that time? Okay, that's a great question. But the vehicle of AI is part and parcel almost of everything that we're doing. So the same way that everybody is different, every topic and every subject that we're talking about, that has to be taken with nuance. It has to be taken with understanding that there are things that are differences. There are things that are differences also. That there are some aspects of the AI that are tremendously integral and very very helpful. And there are some places that it crosses over into a little bit of danger. If the AI is becoming the identity of who I am, if I'm defined by the AI, I can't even make a sentence on my own because I'm so used to not putting in the effort. So then that probably crossed into a place that is bad usage. We know from almost everything that we do in life, and this is what Rabbi Israeli was indicating, Lefum Tzara Agra, that the way to grow, the way to succeed in anything that we're doing, has to do with effort. It has to do with struggle. It has to do with sometimes being vulnerable. It has to do with sometimes with misunderstandings. It has to do with problems and with challenges and with not getting along as we shift over into relationships now. That the strength of the relationship has to do not with being not with perfection, not with somebody who always knows the right thing to say. But specifically when we don't know the right thing to say. But the person that we are in the relationship with, so they want to be in the relationship with us. If they wanted a relationship with AI, so then they don't need you, right? They wouldn't have to struggle in order for two people, in order to blend together, which is one of the hardest things that exist in our world. So the person wouldn't spend if they weren't interested in us in the essence of who we are, in the core of who we are, in the identity of who we are. So then they'll just plug into AI. Tell me what I need to hear. As I was doing research on in preparation for this, it is astounding. Most of the things that I listened to were TED talks by non-Jews. I don't mean to. Unfortunately, sadly, I don't think that the Jewish community is exempt from this, and it's not part of our world. But there are endless cases of people talking about it. It must be a big thing because on these talks, there are tons of people talking about them. That people who are dysfunctional in relationships, they can't build a relationship for another person, either because I'm afraid it's not a safe space. I'm afraid what the other person is going to say. I'm afraid of the rejection. I'm afraid of the misunderstanding. So they turn to the AI because it's so much of an easier way. It's a safer space. Usually the algorithm is going to spit back the things that I want to hear. It makes me feel good because it's saying the things that it's read through the patterns of who I am and what I'm writing. It understands that's what I want to hear. And while that's short term, while that's great, and that makes us. That makes us feel good, but that's not a relationship. That is the AI patterned it after myself. But there's one level I'm feeding what it should say, but then there's another level of it's reading who I am. It's spitting back who I am. That's not building with together with somebody else. I'll close with the following point, just so we can allow for questions. Any wisdom that we need to know, we should always look. In the Torah, all wisdom is in the Torah, and especially if we were experts in Parshas Bereishis and Sefer Bereishis, but Parshas Bereishis in particular. So the wisdoms of Parshas Bereishis could tell us a lot of things about our lives. One of the very first things that happens in the existence of the earth is Hashem says, "Lo tov vayos adam levado eselo ezer kenegdo." It's not good for people to be by themselves. That's not the way that the world is. That comes before Shabbos. It comes before Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It comes any mitzvah that you're going to say, except for Pru Rvu, except I can't really precede Puruvu, because Puruvu can't happen by ourselves. So any mitzvah that you're going to talk about, before that mitzvah happens, before Hashem introduces himself to the world, is the concept of Lo Tov Vayos Adam Levado. It's not good for people to be by themselves. If you read through the Psukim, there's so many fascinating insights that could happen, but just on a very simple level, the Torah starts, Hashem creates Adam, and then Lo Tov Vayos Adam Levado, it's not good for Adam to be by himself. Anybody know what happens next? What? Say again? No, say it, because that's what I wanted you to say. Yeah, so what happens? So what does he do?
He creates a relationship.
He creates a relationship, which is, we know it's Chava. Okay? If you were writing the Torah, so that's the Torah I would believe in. That makes sense. Right? It doesn't make sense for man to be by himself. So then Hashem creates Chava, and we're good to go. Now we can get off and running with the future of the world. But there is a whole fat section in between those two things that's stuck in there. So before he creates Chava, so Hashem sends all the animals to Adam for Adam to call them names. Like, why is that stuck in there? You made a bold statement of that man's not good by himself. So then let's finish the task first, and then let's get on to the animals afterwards. Why are you sticking in the animals before you create Chava? Yeah.
Well, the animals are other things. He's seeing if Adam can build a relationship with the animals instead of being another
person. Excellent. Yeah, you should be up here. Yeah, you got all the answers.
I had the one earlier from Rabbi Gordon today, the Tefillah Kavura.
This is what he said?
Yeah, that's what we were covering today.
Okay, but where did you get this one about the animals from?
I didn't think of that.
Okay, so maybe really at the chon, maybe you should give the tefillah chabur also. It's clear that the pshat is that before Adam is getting to Chava, Hashem brings all the animals. The Torah even says at the end of the section that Adam looked at all the animals and lo matza is there. He didn't find anything over there, and then it becomes Chava. But it seems that the essence of the message is that we could spend our time looking for anything that's going to fulfill the role that another human being is supposed to fulfill. And at the end of the day, no matter how exciting, no matter how much fun, no matter how attached to cat, dog, or whatever it is, you know, whatever pet or whatever AI or whatever, no matter how attached that we're going to end up being to that thing, the only real relationship that is critical to the future of the world and to our existence, the only real relationship is going to be Vayil Vasar Echad, is only when there's going to be a man and a woman. And in order to have that relationship, so if somebody is going to try their hardest, and they're going to sit there, and they're going to try to write it out, and we're going to try to put together our own words, and we need, you know, again, we're men. And Hashem gave us a lot of great things, and Hashem also made us a little bit communicatively challenged. So if we need AI as the answer to our prayers to try to polish that up and kind of touch it up here and there, okay, is that so different than a speechwriter? You know that so many people have. Is that so different than when people put out these amazing books, which there are svarim, they're amazing, and they have an editor and they're touching it up? You know, because there are some people that are good at I hope that if one of you guys has a friend that is so savvy, like he's a real woman expert, or a real Rebbe expert, a real friend expert, and you're like, listen, I just need the right word or something. Just go over and ask him. You know, ask him for what the right word for this particular. So if that's what we're doing and we need assistance, then great. If we're being lazy, if we're just like, well, I have this assignment, it's called an anniversary card, I have an assignment, it's called a birthday card or a thank you card, and I have to write it, and I don't have time to deal with it. So I just put it into AI. So then again, that's not, as Rabbi Israeli said, l'fum tzara agra, the effort, the person that we're targeting, it's their effort that we're most interested in. So I would encourage using AI and saying, modu manachnu lach, thank you Hashem for answering my tefillos and giving us AI. And at the same time, understanding that we can only thank Hashem for the AI if we have a good finger on the pulse of who we are as people. Yeah.
If someone uses AI like a lot, like streamer now, whether for emotional things or intellectual things, how could that affect them negatively or positively in terms of their ability to do emotional tasks or intellectual tasks if they are continually just relying on AI over and over?
Listen, I will. I'm not so old, but in my years of communication, as the decades passed, I would. I don't think that I could look you in the face and say honestly that since WhatsApp was created, that my communication skills are as good as they used to be. In general, as creatures of habit, the more that we practice anything, so then the better that we are. Failure, because we're not. We don't have to be perfect. You know, we don't have to have it polished. We don't have to be, but taking things, taking the shortcuts or the shorter, it's not a shortcut per se, but using a shorter pathway to whatever it is that we're trying to put out. So it doesn't allow our neurons. It doesn't allow our brains to develop the same way that when we're working out, looks like you work out. So the same way that in order to work out, in order to build muscles, so the muscles have to tear, the muscles have to fail, the muscles have to rip apart, and then when they regrow, so then it becomes much bigger and much stronger, and that's the goal that we're looking for. Our brains are much of the same way. The more that we crack our brains to try to figure out the right word, to try to figure out the answer, the more that we do that, so then we develop skills and we develop identity. Again, I stand by what I said. Hashem put these things in the world and they should be used. But we have to manage like everything else. Am I still, while I'm gaining the benefits of whatever tools that I'm having, am I still making sure that I am pushing to explore how great I could be in either in knowledge or in effort or in creativity or in inventing, innovating? Am I allowing my brain? Am I giving it the work that it needs in order to develop tools so that there could be one great idea, one great invention?
I'll share something amazing with you. But I was talking once to somebody that's involved in this world of AI, and I don't know if anybody here has these like self-driving cars. So I asked somebody who is involved in the world of high tech. You know, are you nervous about these self-driving cars? You know, you're at a red light, you press a button, and it takes you wherever you need to go. You sit there, and you know, your hands are up. And self-driving cars make no mistakes, no wrong turns. They never hit a squirrel. They never hit a person. They can parallel park into everything. So this person responded to me, said, the thing that I'm most afraid of is that it's going to ruin the development of the human brain. That every time you guys probably don't drive yet, but you will pretty soon. Every time you get into the car, okay, it's basically your brain is working out, right? Your brain stops and your brain goes, and you have to figure out when to turn and when not to turn. Most of the driving that we do is built on memory, right? You get in the car in the morning, the bus takes you a certain way, your mother or father drives you to school a certain way, right? And the light turns red, you know you have to stop. Right, there's a message that's sent from your brain all the way down to your foot to press on the brake. There's a message that's sent to press on the gas. It works out our brain every single time we drive. So with the advent of the world of self-driving cars, so as people get older, so you need to continue to exercise your brain. So what's going to happen? So the fear that this person presented to me was that the inability to exercise our these unbelievable mechanisms that are between our ears that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created is going to result in rotting, is not going to work out, is not going to is not going to allow for the decisions that we need to make on the road every single day to allow for us to think, to us to react, for us to be able to go ahead and make a left, make a right, go straight. All of those things are so fundamental to the way that we think. That is the greatest fear of people in the world of high tech about self-driving cars. So why do I share that with you? Because the more that, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, the more that you get used to AI spitting back something at you, of course I agree with that. Of course that makes sense. It's exactly what I want to hear, right? So we get used to that. Our interactions are with somebody presenting something to me. Of course I agree with that. I agree with that. There's no level of disagreement with the world of AI when I do disagree. So it doesn't matter how I respond to a disagreement that I have. AI, you are dumb, right? Right. Okay, so then he puts back, I am not dumb. I actually thought that this is what you... All right. So we're not allowing for our brains to exercise themselves in terms of the way that we interact with other people. So the emotional tasks that you're describing, that you're asking about, could potentially be sacrificed the more that we become accustomed to the world of being solely dependent on the spitback of whichever AI server we're going to use.